What's up, bookworms? Welcome to episode 153 of the Cantina Book Club podcast, where readers can find interviews with authors of all genres. I'm Megan, self-proclaimed Cantina queen, here to bring you insights from the authors themselves. Each week features a Cantina conversation with an author, sometimes they're returning guests, and sometimes it's someone new. So please be sure to hit that subscribe button so that you never miss out on an episode, and feel free to browse through existing episodes so that you can catch a previous interview about a book that you finished. Today's episode features a chat with Nina Simon. We're talking about her book, My Sister is Going to Kill Me. The book is available now. This was such a fun chat with Nina. We talked about her love for adventure and the Grand Canyon, all the fascinating research that she did to bring this amateur sleuth crime fiction suspense novel to life. Some spoilers do pop up in these conversations, but the episode is more enjoyable if you read the book anyway. So if you don't know why, I am super surprised about a particular flower from her book being actually real, and the facts about that flower were true, then hit pause, add this episode to your playlist, and go pick up a copy of My Sister is Going to Kill Me. The interview will be here when you are ready. Just a heads up that I often use adult language to express my feelings towards the authors and their work. Whether the characters need to get their shit together or I am saying what the fuck to them for making me feel things, just please be mindful of round listening ears and to your comfort level. Books coming out this week got A Beautifully Crafted Lie by Evelyn Ash. That is next on my reading list because she is going to be an upcoming guest soon. So keep a lookout for that. And without further ado, get ready, grab your favorite drink. Here is Nina. So today we've got Nina Simon. We're talking about her book, My Sister is Going to Kill Me, that comes out on August 18th. Nina, thank you so much for joining me. I finished this. I think I was excited to read this book just based on the title alone. And I finished it a couple days ago, really engaging. And I love the sister relationship. And I'm just I am a sucker for a good suspense, amateur sleuth story. So I'm excited to dig a little bit deeper today.
Yeah, I'm so glad. And it's funny because with my first book, Mother, Daughter, Murder Night, I was not the one who came up with the title, and the title came really late in the publication process. With this book, actually, the title was the first thing that came to me along with the setting, and I knew that this title, My Sister Was Gonna Kill Me, was going to work for the kind of book I was trying to write, so I'm so glad that it grabbed you because it's been with this story from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah, perfect. I know I want to talk to authors and they're coming up with titles or even with the book covers and stuff, trying to get the vibe down. And it's funny to see how things might change if the vibe is right.
Yes.
And it stays right. Cause it really does. Cause it kind of sets the tone.
Yeah.
And then once the readers kind of get into the story, we're seeing it as oh, okay, poor Liv. it's Mandy and Liv's sister relationship, and Liv is, she kind of knows what to expect, but doesn't know what to expect. Mm. She just and so it's kind of funny because right from the get-go when we meet Mandy, she's like, oh shit, I'm late.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So this is a book that takes place focusing on two sisters who are total opposites, Liv and Mandy, who go on a whitewater rafting trip together down the Grand Canyon. And yeah, this is a pair who every year go on a sister trip, but they trade off whose turn it is to develop the trip. And this year it's Mandy who's the chaos engine within their partnership, whereas Liv is very by the books. It's funny, actually, even in early reads, some people really identify with Liv, some people really identify with Mandy. And certainly my sister and I, people ask, oh, which one of you is who? And I'm like, no, we both contain both of these, and we're very different from these sisters. But I had a lot of fun going on that trip with my sister and then writing this story.
I love that. I love that. The Grand Canyon is on my bucket list, although not camping there. I would just like to go just observe the beauty and just chill.
Yes.
But no, I don't. It was really funny. This book gave me such a glimpse into everything that location has to offer, because I think, and also I just remember I have two kids and reading one of their library books. I think it was about the Grand Canyon. And I was I didn't know any of this when I was reading it with him. It was just all the geology and then the flora and the fauna and how much is really down, because I feel a lot of the images that people see
they just see beautiful shapes in one or two or three colors. And we don't see like all of like when you get down there, like, oh, like this is a challenge. This is a whole thing. It's got its own ecosystem. And it's like, it's got to watch out. Just like any, like if you're going through the woods, you got to like be on alert. And it's like, it's the same thing where there might be something hiding. Like you're in the animal's territory, you're in the plant's territory. And so I loved getting that little insight through these two characters. Who were just like, you know, and Mandy, she's up for anything almost, or she just goes with it, and she likes the faster paced, like adventure, spontaneity. And then Liv is just okay. Like she likes to have a, she has a good head on her shoulders. She likes to have a good, like get her head wrapped around what's going on. And it's, I love that. I love that dichotomy of it. Yeah. It was just so much. I can imagine you had so much fun with it.
I really did. And to what you're saying, the Grand Canyon really is such an extraordinary place. I absolutely fell in love with it before, actually. I'm a huge outdoors woman. I've been to all kinds of parks. And actually, for a lot of years, I resisted going to the Grand Canyon because I was like, oh, it's so overplayed. It's so popular. And then I got there and I was just like, I have been a moron. This is incredible. And I think, to me, one of the most extraordinary things about the Grand Canyon is that most of the natural wonders of this world rise up from the surface. It's a mountain range, it's a forest. And in this case with the Grand Canyon, all of the magic is down below, and you're actually going into the earth, into the history of the earth, to what you're saying about the geology, and yet into this incredible and very remote environment. And for a murder mystery, it's also so fun to be able to land characters in a place where there really is not a lot of help available to you. You have very limited resources. And also the river only flows in one direction. So even if you want to spend more time with a clue or with some evidence that's behind you, you can't go back. You just have to keep going forward. And in that way, I like to think about this book like a train mystery, like Murder on the Orient Express, because everybody is on this rafting trip and has to just keep going down the river, even as dead bodies are hitting the water.
And they're kind of stuck with each other, right?
Yes.
Like, that is,
Yeah.
I loved how Liv was just like, we'll get into it, but just like her forwardness and her kind of like taking the reins, and all the other characters kind of had to, go with it. Like when she gets down to like, okay, this is where we're going to put you guys. And then we're going to be here. And they're like, why? Like it was that one of those, some of those conversations were just like so funny to me, even though it was like, no, this is, she's like, no, it's for everybody's safety. Like even yours too. And they're like, what? That makes no sense.
It was one of the challenges of writing this story is that most murder mysteries, you want to have dead bodies hit the page very early on. But I knew that in a book like this, we had to get on the river long enough for not only readers to get acclimated to the beauty and also the unique challenges of rafting down the Colorado, but also they had to get far enough that they couldn't just be like, somebody died, I'm hiking back to the rim, or like, I'm done now. And so I had this challenge of thinking about, how do you build the stakes and the tension while waiting to bring in the first dead body so that they can really be in a tough situation when that happens?
Yeah. Oh my God. I can't even imagine. Like I'm not an outdoor adventurer. I went camping a handful of times, but not until I met my husband, my new husband. Like I grew up kind of like in the city and then we moved to the suburbs, but I just, my parents weren't like campers, outdoorsy people. So I just never did. And it's like, I don't mind camping. It's fun. Sure. And like with, I have two kids, so it's like, yeah, it's probably fun for them too. But I like, if I never went camping again ever in my life, I would be okay with that.
Fair.
Like
Well,
but like, I respect it, but it's like, kind of like, no, that's fine. Like I don't.
Yeah. In a story like this too, where it's very much an armchair adventure, I always remember one of my feedback pieces I got from my editor saying, we want all the feel of camping in the Grand Canyon with very little of the mechanics. Like, don't tell us how to poop. Don't tell us how to paddle. Just put us there. And of course, for people who are really into the outdoors, we get really hung up on like, ooh, that's so cool how they set this up so that you could get filtered water in XYZ way. But actually, most readers just want the joy of the adventure. And also, as you're saying, to be like, nice for them that they're camping. I'm going to sit here in my really comfortable couch while I'm reading this story.
And you also kind of have to be mindful of the flow, right? Like those, like the little minutiae, like get in the way of the story. And it's funny to balance that because people who are into those, like they might look at the lack of detail or they might be like, wait, that doesn't work like that. And it's like, just get in with it. Just stay in it. Just suspension of disbelief, however that phrase goes. So it's just like, just go with it. Just accept it for what it is, right?
And I definitely did a ton of research to be able to make sure that everything was grounded in how, and I've rafted the Grand Canyon, I've backpacked into the Grand Canyon, but also spent a lot of time talking to guides and experienced adventurers there. But then definitely, as you're saying, also strategically picking, like, gosh, this rapid and this rapid are too far away from each other. I'm actually going to, sure, the Grand Canyon's been there millions of years, but I'm just going to take out a few river miles so that I can put this action closer together. And actually, it's one of my great...
That's what, like, your author's note, I think you put in there too. You're like, okay, guys, I know, like, copying off of like the research part of it. Was there anything that you were like, if you approached it in a similar way than you do like other titles and that you've worked on, is there like, was there anything surprising that you learned or fascinating or like, as you were just trying to like dig in to get some of that like authenticity?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that certainly the mystery involves this plant called Datura, which is a real plant that exists all throughout the Southwest that has these crazy psychedelic properties. And it was amazing to speak with somebody who
Oh, so it's a real
she had.
plant.
Oh, it's a real plant. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. If you read Carlos Castaneda, it is the plant used in that hallucinogenic world. And also, it's a plant I encountered almost 10 years ago when I was for a totally different life in South America and people, and it was being used in crimes to control people and zombify them.
Wow.
But I met a woman who's now a friend during the research for this who has a very deep kind of spiritual relationship with that plant. She actually changed her last name to Datura. And just sitting down with her, anytime you meet somebody when you're doing research for a novel, where it's like somebody has devoted their whole life to this thing that maybe is going to be on just a few pages of your story, it's just such a treat to dive deeply with people who are very invested in something. And then I would also say that I talked to one Grand Canyon River guide who had actually had somebody die an accidental death on one of their trips, and which was
Wow.
terrible to hear about. But one of the things that he really brought forward that made me think hard was about this fact that people assume that because you can go on a website and buy a ticket to join a Grand Canyon rafting trip, or in the case of a story like this, a company can plan kind of a corporate getaway onto the Grand Canyon. We think it's safe. But actually, when we're dealing with a place like the Colorado River and whitewater rafting and rocks and desert and heat and all of this, we are so subject to the elements. And
Oh,
while this
yeah.
is a book that's about human crime and motivated murder, it also is a story that is about being in this wilderness that can feel like a playground for humans, but also can be a very dangerous place. And I think that as an outdoors woman, I'm constantly thinking about that interplay
Yeah.
of when are we experiencing danger, when are we experiencing safety, and what are the things that contribute to us feeling like a place is safe or dangerous. And I think we think that about people too, right? This is a book where you don't know who the murderer is, you're trying to figure it out. And so similarly, you're always, as a reader, querying, like, what do I think about this person's motives, or how is this person approaching this? And I think similarly, the Grand Canyon hides its deadly to some extent, for those of us who feel like it's just a place to enjoy a pleasurable vacation.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like you have to have a certain level of respect for, because it's the planet. Like it's
Yes.
the earth and we're just visiting, right? And like our and the this the Grand Canyon has been here for like what millennia, like forever, and it's been changing and the animals and the people that the like I said, the flora and the fauna that live there, that grow there, that's their turf. And it's yeah, it's like I think that's part of like my aversion or apathy towards outdoors, because I'm just like, you know what, like I get open ocean too, like I respect it, I don't want anything to do with it, I'm not gonna mess with anything, I'm not like an adventurer, I will go, I go, I'm like good for a good walk, a good hike, I'm not gonna shy away from that, but I'm also like to know that there's some that I could have reliable transportation to like when I'm done. like when I'm
Yep,
done. So
that's
I was just
totally
like,
fair.
that's why I was
And
like, yeah, that's why like I felt for these characters who were like kind of just like, oh, like no, it's gonna take them forever to get down to where we're at, and like we have to call them in now, and they're gonna make it by tomorrow, and like we have all these supplies, we have to make it last. And I'm just like, oh God, this is a nightmare. And then you gotta worry it. Then you got to worry about a killer in your midst.
Just that little thing too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny, Megan, because of course I love being in those environments. And actually, when I was doing research for this book, I did one backpacking trip down into the Grand Canyon with a friend, and we were having such a great time. And I was like just busily taking notes. And I said to him, I was like, could we make our food stretch one more day? Because I just really want to do more research. And so I like didn't eat dinner that night, and then we made it work. But it meant that we were hiking all the way out to the North Rim, which is the higher
Yeah.
side, on a morning with no food. And actually, there is a character who just plays a role on just one page of the book, an FBI agent whose name is Casey. And that person is named after somebody we met when we were hiking up, because we were hiking up, we were about 6 hours in. We were maybe 3 hours away from the top where we had food, but we ran into these people who were coming down, and we were chatting with them. They're asking what we were doing, and I was talking about the book. And this guy says, I have some extra energy bars, but, and I said, what's it going to cost us to get one of them? And he said, put me in the book. And I said, all right, murder mystery. You could end up being a victim. You could be a murderer. He's like, I don't care. So there's an FBI agent at the very end of the book who is named after this guy, Casey, who I don't know anything about him except for that he gave me an energy bar when we
And he
were on
was
a round trip.
taunting the energy bar.
Yeah,
Like,
that's right. And he was very sweet about it, actually. Yeah.
that's hilarious. No, that's a solid like bribe, right? Like, no, I
Yeah,
got you,
yeah.
but I need a little, I like, just write me
Right.
in your book.
Yeah,
I don't care
yeah,
if I
yeah.
die. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you can make me the villain. It's whatever. Like,
Right.
that's
Yeah.
hilarious. That's
Yeah.
awesome. Oh, that's so fun. So I kind of want to like talk about maybe your background a little bit, because you said, oh, from a life before. Was there anything else about like even personal or professional that maybe like any skills or experiences that transferred into got you ready to get this project into the world?
Yeah. So I've always loved to write ever since I was a kid, but I never imagined that it was something I could do professionally. In college, I was an engineering student by day and a slam poet by night. I then went to work designing and fixing. I went to work for NASA for about a minute, discovered that wasn't for me, moved into museums and spent decades designing exhibitions, but also started blogging on the side as a way to enhance my learning and my exploration about what museums could do, and started a blog that actually became the biggest blog in the museum industry for a while. Wrote a couple of books about museum practice, so in the nonfiction world. And so by the time I came to writing fiction, which came after a family illness that kind of flipped my world upside down, I had never written fiction before, but I had a lot of experience and comfort with writing being a happy place for me, being a place of curiosity and learning. And I also, because of the nonfiction books, I knew I could finish a full-length book. Now, I knew nothing about writing a novel, and I'd been reading novels forever, but I think about it like when you learn to drive and you've been riding in cars forever, but then you move to the driver's seat and you're like, wait,
Okay,
what is this?
sure.
Where, how do I? And yeah, so I spent so much time in the beginning just reading mysteries, rereading some of my favorites, and really trying to kind of use that engineer brain to pop the hood and figure out, how did they do this? How do they build tension here? How do you do an action scene? All that kind of stuff. So I did a lot of learning through reading. And then was super fortunate that my first novel, Mother Daughter Murder Night, was a Reese's Book Club pick, a New York Times bestseller. And that really created an opportunity for me to say, oh, that wasn't just one project. This could really be my next career. And I'm somebody who loves trying new things, loves learning. So for me, I feel like writing fiction is about my third or fourth career. But I'm just in this sweet spot of the first few years of really figuring it out and trying to get better and all that kind of thing. So I'm really a
Oh,
consummate
yeah.
learner, and I plow that into my writing.
Yeah, and I feel like writing is just such like a process where you're gonna continuously learn, and when you figure something out, you're gonna be like, oh, how can I challenge myself more? And like, how can I like
Yes.
try something new? And how can I, or how can I
Yes.
make this better? And it just gets maybe a little bit tricky when there's more cooks in the kitchen. Like, you have more resources, but there's like other people who are like, you want to trust their judgment, like an editor, for example, or like marketing,
Yeah.
or like book cover designers, things like that. Oh,
Sure.
no, that's why I like, I appreciate the struggle to that extent. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a good thing. And it's also like, also, it's kind of like for all. it is, but at the end of the day, it's gonna be worth it. And it kind of needs to be that way sometimes. Like just to like make sure that you get your project, you get your art out there in a way that and it's fit for the world, right? Like it's fit for or however your community, however like your readers, your readership, it's good to go. I bet maybe when you started the mother-daughter book and then now when you're finished with this book, I bet like you're in a different headspace or you're in a different like experience level in terms of like what you know, what you think you can do now. Like I just can't imagine how much you've grown with just those two.
And Mother Daughter Murder Night, the whole first draft of that, I wrote by my mom's bedside while she was going through cancer treatment. And I really wrote it just for her and me as an escape. I never expected it to be published. And it was only when she started getting better, and I had been working in nonprofits forever, and I was nervous about going back to a 60, 80-hour-a-week job because I didn't know what was going to happen with my mom's health. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try. I'm going to try and edit this. I'm going to try and get an agent, get a book deal. And so I did not write that book expecting it to be published. Whereas My Sister is Going to Kill Me, I got the contract for that book after Mother Daughter Murder Night had been a New York Times bestseller. So, yes, there were different expectations. And also, there were a lot of readers out there. Megan, I'm somebody who really believes that I want to write what I love and what I feel that I'm growing into and invested in. And I want to continue building a relationship with my readers. I think about it a lot. My dad, who passed away a couple years ago, was a rock musician. And he was just somebody who really believed that being an entertainer is an honor and it is a responsibility to your audience. And I think that there are some people who, and I really respect people who are the kind of artists where they're like, I just have to make the art that I have to make. That's cool. I'm somebody who feels like I need to be in relationship with people through the art that I'm making. And so if you love the warmth and the humor in Mother Daughter Murder Night, I hope that you will find that in My Sister is Going to Kill Me as well. Even though, as you say, I really worked to learn and bring in new things. There are more thriller vibes in this book. And also, one of the things I really tried to do, this book is a strict alternating chapter book where it's like one chapter in one sister's head, one chapter in the other. And actually, the kind of books I looked to most for inspiration for that were rom-coms. And I felt like I wanted to write a book that had that same kind of snappiness where you had a real difference in personalities and where you were seeing the relationship develop between them, even as in this case, they're solving a murder mystery as they go down the Grand Canyon.
I love that. I love that you because dual POV could be a challenge into itself because you got to like just make distinct voices. And it's, yeah, but I think one of my favorite scenes was when they all decided to, and then I can edit this out if you think it's a spoiler, but when they decided to just go ahead and try the product with the cream, and
Carefree, yep.
man, we get, yeah, and then we get to Mandy's point of view where she's just like enjoying it and she's just like embracing it. And I felt the interaction between her and Liv where Liv was like, hey, like, and she's like, hey, like, we've got to talk about it. And Mandy was just like, I don't know what it was about it. It was just like that scene. It was like those two like points of view. Like we know what Liv is by this point. We know how like what Mandy is by this point. We know how they are and who they are. And then where Liv was like, I'm good. I'm not gonna do that right now. But then she still comes in. Like I just felt like we're like Mandy. It was just like such a soft, tender moment, even though they're talking about like how are we gonna figure this out. Like I think just like through Mandy's point of view, where she was just like, well, "You're like this," and Liv was like, "Wait, explain that. Like what?" But Liv was just like she was like she knew how to talk to her sister. She knew how to get it out of her. And Mandy also knew how to talk to her sister. She was still, totally like out three sheets to the wind or anything like that. She was just like enjoying like the relaxation and just like the calmness. And I don't know. I just think that was like one of my favorite scenes where she was just kind of like chilling and then she like Liv comes over here trying to be all serious and then she was just like and then but it was like a
Clouds,
good conversation with that. Still like a productive almost when like and Liv was even like, yes, separate boats. Like I thought that was so fun and so like cute and like wholesome even. Like it was just like gave me as a reader for me personally the insight as to where even in this situation they both complement each other so much.
Yeah, and
And
so much
I
of what I
loved
wanted to write
how,
about, yeah, I really care about that nuance, complexity of a deep family relationship and bond. And I really feel like with my sister, we are so close. We are so similar, actually. We are not like Liv and Mandy. But there is that sense that even if you're disagreeing or bickering or falling into an argument that you've had since you were 9 and 10 years old, there is just this deep well of love and understanding. And there's a way, I think, that your adult sibling can absolutely drive you bananas. You might absolutely want to kill them. But there also is a way that your adult sibling, nobody knows you like that person. And whether it's that you're trying some weird skincare product that makes you feel free in ways that might feel a little weird, or whether you're trying to solve a mystery, it's like, even if you've never done this before, doing it with your sibling, it may not be your first choice of who you do it with, but you know exactly how to go through a tough situation together because you've probably been there before in some way.
That's what I liked about your author's note too, because you did kind of capture that relationship in describing your and your sister's relationship in a few sentences where it was like that you're close enough to where like you could trust them. There's the bond there, but also that you guys know how to get under each other's skin, how to say the particular things to just really, if you want to hurt them, you want to piss them off, you know exactly how to do it. Even if you don't mean to, and if you mean to, you know exactly it's just like the tensions are high. I get it. Like I have my older sister, she's half sister. She's 10 years older than me. And like, I have a younger brother who's 2 years younger. And so I get it. It's just like those unique relationships where it's just like, oh, it's almost like bordering on almost like best friends too. Like where you just like are so close and so tight, and you guys have seen each other at your worst. You've seen each other at your most vulnerable. You know, the pressure points, you know, the soft spots, you know, the points where just to get them, like, I hit him where it hurts. And that's just, that was like,
and also, you know, that. Yeah, you've shared those silly moments and the pillow fights and all, you know, all of that. And I think that does lead to a very rich relationship, and one that's pretty different than any other kind of relationship you could have, unless, as you say, you have a best friend forever. Actually, my sister and I share a best friend who we've all known each other since we were about 1 year old. And she's like our other sister. And to have a lifelong relationship is just such a special thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially as you get older and you can still hang on to that like friendship. I'm like, I'm going to be 40 in like 6 months. And I'm just thinking like, wow, like how long have I known some of my closest friends that I'm still see them? They're still part of my life where we're all got kids and we started like do family trips. We still try to make time for each other and like do holidays together, do like whatever together. And it's just, I feel like there's just something special about that. I'm like, oh my God, have we known each other for 25 years really? And we're still talking to each other and we're still inviting each other to like everything, or like our kids' birthday parties and stuff. Like I love it. I think that there's definitely something like to be said about that type of relationship too, where it's and also we're also multidimensional, like multifaceted. It's like you know, there's still parts of us that really cling on to those other parts of other people,
right?
That you get the fulfillment from some people that you don't get from others.
And that was something I really wanted to play with here too, is that I think with our siblings, we can so often fall back into a version of ourselves when we were 12 or when we were 8 or whatever it is. And that's probably a facet that we don't show other people very often. And there are beautiful and not so beautiful parts of that. But I really also hope that My Sister is Going to Kill Me becomes the kind of book that people can buddy read with their adult siblings and be able to revel in some of the like, oh yeah, here's how that happens for us. And maybe even to plan a sibling trip, because I feel like for my sister and I, going on a sister vacation was such a dream. And actually, I remember that when I was starting to work on this book, Ellen Hildebrand's 5-Star Weekend was out. And the premise of that is that it brings together her best friend from different decades of her life. And it's the kind of premise where whether you would ever do it or not, people lean in, they're like, oh yeah, I could imagine how fun that would be. And I think similarly, this idea of two sisters who every year go on a sister vacation, there's some part of me that wants that in my life, even though that hasn't been my life, at least not yet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, it's never too late. Right. Like, would your sister agree to that? But like, all right, let's go. Let's start right now. Like,
I think so. I think actually, to be honest, I'm probably the holdup. My sister is an incredible world traveler and she's always like, come to Brazil, come to Cuba, come to these places. I am. And I'm like, oh, okay. I really like my kitchen, but
That's hilarious. But where I'm at, you have to gear yourself up. And yeah, no, I totally get that. That's so funny. Okay. What were the most challenging parts to write? What were the most enjoyable parts to write?
Writing a strict dual point of view where every chapter is switching creates this funny challenge because you have to have enough action for each character that it warrants switching, right? And because you can't have like a 40-page chapter for one character and then a 2-page chapter for the next character. So there were some times where I really had to block out, okay, all of these clues need to be revealed, or all of these actions have to happen, but they have to still happen in a way where I'm going back and forth. And especially the sisters start on this trip together, but eventually they get separated. So especially when they were separated, I feel like that it was challenging to do a lot of the Jenga work of making sure that flipping back and forth made sense, that it wasn't leaking tension, that the tension and the stakes could feel high even as you were switching. So that was definitely part one of the challenging things. One of the most, I love doing the nature writing, but I love poking fun. I love humor, writing with humor. And as such a committed outdoors woman, camper, backpacker, all that stuff, I love writing characters who hate the outdoors. I love throwing in a character. There's a teenage influencer in this book who like looks at a huge waterfall and she's like, oh, this one's mid. And like, I love, it's a way that I poke fun at myself and also acknowledge that not everybody feels the way about camping that I feel about camping. So I love writing those characters. I also had a lot of fun writing the guides. Being a rafting guide is such an intense and committing job because you're basically signing up to spend from April until October in the Grand Canyon, week after week, with different groups of people, ensuring their life safety while also they're planning for a vacation and you're in one of your favorite places in the world. And it also means that, like, your life the rest of the year is usually a little weird. And so I loved inventing these guides. There's a guide named Thor who I have, like, a very special place in my
I
heart
love
for.
Thor. He
I
for
love
a
Thor.
while
I
he
have,
was kind
like,
of sus, but like I loved him.
there are so many Thors in my life, and I just had a lot of fun writing that character. There's also a scene in the book that is a high adventure moment in a slot canyon, and it's based on a, and it's a kind of climbing called off-width climbing that's done without ropes to get through a very narrow place. And I'm a big rock climber, and it was fun to write these amateurs doing a kind of climb that I've done and just love, and just bringing that experience and the excitement and the terror that comes with it into a murder mystery like this.
Gosh, I feel like just okay, murder mystery in the Grand Canyon. I feel like that's in and of itself is just so many possibilities. There's like maybe like a pocket of possibilities, but I feel like you got a lot to work with. You got a
Yeah,
lot
and
to
at the
work
same
with
time,
there.
Megan, I also, there were a lot of things I researched that can go wrong in the Grand Canyon that I decided not to put in. Because one of the things that bothers me, I don't like it in a murder mystery. I like a fair and play mystery where you can really track the motivations, why did this person do this, and that where it holds together tightly. And so I didn't want to have a lot of things like a monsoon or a rock slide where it's like, okay, this terrible thing happened, but it's pretty random. It is not about the murderer setting this event into motion. I think there's only one sort of natural disaster thing that happens in the book that truly is not caused by the murderer. And it was fun for me to actually watch and learn about all of these crazy things that can happen in the Grand Canyon and then say, you know what? I'm not going to have that because that would be a distraction from the human story that's going on. I want the Grand Canyon to be an incredible backdrop for this story, but really fundamentally, it's about how the sisters relate to each other in the personal drama, and then, of course, figuring out who's the murderer and what's going on over there.
My reader experience is like, or even like entertainment, like even when I'm watching TV shows or a movie, I have this running joke with my husband because after the kids go to bed, we like chill out, get ready to like catch up on our shows or watch a movie that maybe we want to watch. And it's really funny because he'll be like, oh, I bet it's this, or I bet it's that, or guess what? This person's going to show up and it's going to be that. Like he can, and he has like a 75% success rate in predicting things, where I'm just like, I don't catch on that quick. And so I get a little, maybe a little bit of annoyed where I'm like, just go join like a writer's group, join like a focus group, join like, if that, like, why is this so easy for you to like anticipate or figure out or like see the, like the things, the clues leading up to
Yeah.
it. But I'm like, I've been okay with my reader experience. It was like, I don't always catch it right away, or I'm not always like onto it,
Sure.
but I'm okay with that. Even then, I'm just, even if I do catch onto it, I'm like, okay, how's it gonna unfold, right? Like, how is it,
Yes.
how's the whodunit gonna happen? Like, how is it? So I just like, even when I write my notes, I was like, what is a dermatologist hiding? I was like writing all
Nice.
these like things that I was like, wait a second, wait a second. Like, this person is being sus. These
Yep.
siblings are sus. Like,
Yep.
these, like, wait, who and who shows up? What? Like, I was
Yeah.
like, so
I'm like you, Megan.
I, yeah, like.
Yeah, when I'm reading a good mystery, I'm flipping the pages too fast to form theories. And one of the things I've learned as a writer is this idea that, like, you should be putting your suspects on a lazy Susan. And so, whichever suspect is in front of you, as
That's
soon as you get
such a, I
evidence,
love that. I love that
yeah.
wording. I love that like analogy, like on a
Yeah,
lazy
and so you
Susan.
keep
Yes.
moving through. And actually, one of the fun things that was a lot easier with a book like this is because they're all on a rafting trip, it's not like you have to go find a person. Like, they're all with you all the time. And so that was also fun to be able to very quickly move from suspect to suspect so that your head keeps turning. Oh, what about, oh, but and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh
I
yeah,
will
and then
say,
who it ended up being, I did not see that coming until
oh,
like the
good.
end, where I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. That
wait
was
a
fun to
second.
write.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say to your husband's experience, for a very short minute, I did a project with the show CSI New York, and I remember talking with their writers. And of course, that is a case of the week, pretty formulaic show. And they were very clear on it. Now, those kinds of shows are a little ruined for me because they're just like, here's the pattern, here's how we do it. Maybe I'm
Yeah.
not going to tell you now because I don't want it to be ruined for people, but it does. I think that when I'm writing, I like to play into tropes, but I also like to push against them a little bit too, so that it's not like, oh, okay, it must be X because it's Y.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's kind of the tricky part of even like any kind of fiction writing. It's if there's a romance, you know, you have a formula to follow,
Right.
like, or you can maybe veer off of it, but it's like people expect a certain like a happy ever after out of it, right? And
Yeah.
like even with suspense thrillers, there's a certain formula you should follow if you want it to be like suspenseful and engaging and ha tug the reader along and really like really like throw them for a loop. And like even just sci-fi fantasy, there's like a certain, but the writing in general follows a formula and stuff. I don't want to say like a to-do list, but it's almost like a to-do list, right? Like you have to like make sure you got this, make sure you got that,
Sure.
but then it's also, or like a checklist, but then it's also either with each genre there's a certain formula you have to find. So it's just like, yeah, it could be super tricky to like make it your own and make it different and make it still like exciting for you as the writer and also exciting for the reader too. So I
Yeah.
totally, yeah, I totally respect that like awareness, right? Like you got to figure that out. Okay, so some more fun. Let's see. So any character in the book in your group, what character would you go to if you needed to plan a party?
Oh, definitely Mandy. I feel like she like is made of glitter and she has a lot of fun lateral ideas and will always take things way over the top. Is there anybody else? Yeah, no, that would be my party planner for sure.
I would go to a party planned by Manny for sure.
Absolutely. I feel like there would be a
Which
mechanical
character?
bull. Yeah.
She would kind of like just pick and choose. I feel like it'd be a hodgepodge of entertainment,
Yes,
right? Like
absolutely.
you got, we got something from here, we got something from here. Oh,
Yeah.
that's hilarious. I love that. What character would you go to if you needed to prep for a first date?
Huh, maybe the dermatologist, Dr. Keila Dawn. I feel like she's very put together and she also really is deliberate about what she chooses to share and what she chooses to withhold, which I feel like I'm always an oversharer. And I feel like on a first date, you want a little bit of mystery there. I love the character Katie, who's a young female guide who would just be like, screw it, I'm just showing up in my chacos and my shorts straight from the river. And that's probably honestly more my vibe if I was on a first date.
Like any guy who doesn't find me attractive in this state isn't
Right,
worth it.
right,
Like
right.
what?
There's dirt on my face.
That's
Good.
so
That's how I
funny.
also look. Yeah.
You kind of got to come off strong a little bit sometimes where you got to be like, no,
Sure.
this is me. because you can't handle it. Because it's funny, because I think of like, okay, like who, like what are you going for? Do you need someone to kind of hype you up? Do you need someone to make sure you're not going to be weird? Do you need someone to make sure you're wearing the most flattering outfit, right? Like, so I love that question because it does make authors think a little outside of maybe what they were thinking.
And now that you say that, I'm thinking about PK, who is the assistant to the CEO of this wellness company. And I think that PK would do anything for his boss. And I think he's the ultimate kind of image slash hype person slash smooth the way person. So I feel like PK is the kind of person who would show up to the first date before you're there to like pre-vet and make sure that everything's set up. And that, so he would be a good one too.
Yeah, yeah. And he would also help with like, wait, give me a spin. Let me see what you got. Like, let me see.
Absolutely.
Make sure you're looking
absolutely.
Good. Yeah. And then what character would you go to if you needed to hide a body?
Ooh. Of course, in this book, that's a prescient question, but maybe Devon, who is this PhD botanist. I feel like she's so knowledgeable about plants and she's extremely calm. And Devon is the kind of person who I would go to in a crisis because she just seems not necessarily like she knows everything, but that she is unflappable. She is going to figure it all out. And she's very comfortable both in a boardroom and in the Amazon. And so I feel like she would know the right place and certainly the right plants to hide the body in.
I love that because I'm thinking like, man, I think I would like follow both Liv and Mandy into battle. I would feel like I don't like both of them. But also, yeah, like all the people in your pack had qualities that you would definitely be like, you kind of like, they're not all like suspicious, but it's if you're looking at them, like if they're in your group for group project or if they're in your group for like, I don't know, like if you met them at a party in a casual setting or if you were given a challenge, I'd feel like you could rely on them for different things. So it's, that was definitely a unique situation to put them all in for sure. Because they're also
a fun
all
challenge.
Like, really, are we doing this essence quest? Like, what?
And a lot of books would have a bigger cast than this, but you'd meet them slowly over time in different places. In a book like this, you have to meet everybody right away because we're all going on this rafting trip together. So on one hand, it's a much smaller cast than many books would have. And on the other hand, it can feel a little overwhelming because it's like, oh my gosh, everybody is in the boats together all the time. It's not like when I'm in this town, I'm with this person, and then I fly over here to see this person.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I don't know if you're a drinker or it could be a mocktail, whatever. What character would you love to have a drink with and what would be their drink of choice?
Maybe Liv and Mandy's dad, who is a wild, fabulous, good time guy, great storyteller. I feel like his drink of choice would be anything somebody else is buying. He's very much a like, if it's free, it's for me kind of guy. And he's always hustling to make things happen. And certainly Mandy has taken on some of these attributes. I feel like a person like that is probably very annoying to be doing work with or maybe even being in your family, or like your close family, but really fun if they're the wild uncle or if you're just getting drinks with them for the night.
They're fun in small doses, right? Like there's like, I think a lot of people can resonate with that. Like having family members where you're like, yeah, we love him.
Right. A little less.
Can't really, if they're involved, I'm not sure which way this is going to go. Okay. All right. I'm going to throw this at you. What advice would you give to Mandy? What advice would you give to Liv? What advice would you give to Guy? Were the three
guys, their dad. Let me start with Guy. And maybe this is advice that I feel like I give myself as a parent is the most important thing you can do for your kids at any age is love them. And you may not be perfect. You may not be exactly what they need in any one moment, but probably what you can do at any moment, regardless of your circumstance or theirs, is show up with love. And Guy isn't always great at doing that, but there is some of that inside of him. And so that is advice I would give to guys, like just focus on loving your kids as opposed to trying to like work the angle in every situation. I think that Liv, I would tell to like chill out and enjoy the ride. She's somebody who's constantly making a checklist, constantly trying to control the situation. And I feel like I have been that person at times, and you can really miss out on a lot of the beautiful things in life in that regard. And I think that Mandy, on the other hand, is this human firework and always making things happen. It can be the Mandy show. And so I think that for Mandy, it's not about chilling out or reducing her shine, but thinking about and being open to the beauty and the energy and the diversity of what else is out there, as opposed to always trying to like make it glitter bomb everything. And I think that's, again, a lesson I need to learn, because I feel like I'm somebody who really likes to make things happen. I like to make things as exciting as possible. But especially something I learned from being in nature is that, wow, when you quiet down and when you stop bringing main character energy, you can be open to the idea that bird has main character energy and that tree has main character energy, and that you can be in other people's and other entities' world and presence in a way that can really fill you up and be beautiful. So I guess this is advice. I realize all three of these are advice that I feel like I need and I lean on. And that's the thing that happens when you write fiction, right? Is that all of your characters, both their glories and their strengths and their flaws, they come from somewhere inside of you, even if it's not exactly the way you behave in the world.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, all that advice is a solid advice for multiple different types of people. Like, just like slow down, chill, or take a look at around you. love the people that are in your life, and love the people that are looking to you, right? Like, it's just, I think that's like anytime my friends or coworkers who are having their first child, I'm like, the only unsolicited advice I would give to you is just to take one day at a time, because it's a lot, and one size does not fit all. And it's just like, as long as you love the shit out of them, it's really hard to fuck up. Right. Like,
yep, absolutely.
Even if you love them too much, you could be a helicopter parent, but I feel like it's even then, like, I don't know, like helicopter parents, it definitely leaves a mark, but even at the end of the day, I feel like that's still loving them. And people don't, that child might not realize it until later, but it's, but like, I just think about like my own kids, where I'm like, sometimes I'm like silly with them, where I'm like, I'll just randomly hug them or like cuddle with them, or I'll be like, hey, I want to cuddle. I need to cuddle. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, like it's really funny. Cause I'm like, I'll play with them. I'm like, nope, you're in a love trap. Cannot escape my love. And I'll like wrestle with them and tighten my arms around them. And then they think it's a game. Like they, things like that. It's just like, you just kind of got to like sit down and look at it all. And so that's, like advice that you gave to the three of them. It's like, that rings true. I feel like for a lot of, like, it'll resonate for a lot of readers, I feel like. Cause like, especially towards like the end where they're both learning from each other, the sisters.
Yes.
And I love that. I love that. Yeah. That was so fun. That was so cute.
That was something I learned from Mother Daughter Murder Night, is that if you're going to have a book that has both a family drama and a murder mystery, the arc of both of those has to hit its high point at the same time. And so as they are confronting the murderer is also when they are confronting their differences between each other. And that if those things line up well, it doesn't feel like two stories in one. It feels like, oh, these things are coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was really fun to read too. And it was just so sweet where they're like, I got to think like Liv. Or it's like, okay, I'm going to try to do Mandy right now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Not easy to do.
I love that.
Yeah.
Nope, not at all. Especially when they're in their 30s, right? Like, it's okay. Piggybacking off of that, what do you hope readers get out of My Sister Is Going to Kill Me?
Mostly, I hope readers just have a heck of a great time reading it. I'm such a believer that coming to stories that bring you comfort at a tough time, that bring you an escape when you need one. This is a book that is written to be a pleasure to read and just a blast of fun. And I hope people take it on vacation, but I hope people also take it when they're in the hospital waiting for their loved one, or when they're at night feeling like, this is my me time during this hard time. And so I feel like I write not to try and write a perfect book, but to try and write a book full of joy and full of love. And so I hope that love shines through.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. This reader got entertained and
Good.
felt the love between the sisters. So
Good.
yes,
I'm so
mission
glad.
accomplished on that point. Okay, so let's see. Nina, Simon, are you working on anything? Any other projects that you could talk about?
I am working on my next novel, and it is staying in this broad theme of like strong women, wild places, and dead bodies. It is a murder mystery, and it involves women who are hopping freight trains across the Southwest, which is something I had the opportunity to do for the first time last year. I think there are so many great adventure stories that tend to focus on young men. And I think that particularly when it comes to hopping freight trains, it's seen as very male. And I wanted to write a story that was kind of Thelma and Louise meets the Great Train Robberies. We're in this nostalgic, romantic setting of being on these wild trains going across the Southwest. But these actually, it also is a very contemporary story because freight trains today are what are used to carry so much of the e-commerce that we buy online. And so there is this huge world of freight train robbery happening today that is so different than when we think about train robberies during the Wild West. But so I wanted to write a train robbery story for today, but also a story about young women seeking freedom and seeking it by traveling across the West in this very unusual way.
That sounds so fun. Yeah, just be like, it's our turn, girls. Like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, where can we find you online and on social media?
Yes, I am Nina K. Simon pretty much everywhere. So ninaksimon.com. Nina K. Simon on Instagram and Facebook. I think I am technically on Threads and X, but I don't spend a lot of time there. So I would say find me on ninaksimon.com. Find me on Instagram. Also, I have a Substack that is quite personal. I only write a few times a year, but I try to really share my heart about creativity, about writing, about some of the things I'm exploring. And so I love connecting with people there as well.
Nice. Yeah, I think I'm still learning about Substack. Like, I like subscribe to a lot of authors that way. And I think it's just, okay, like people don't quite, they're like, wait, it's like a blog. It's like a newsletter. It's like what?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, like I'm still learning a lot.
Yeah, I just love that format. But also, my Substack actually came out of the fact that every year I write a long personal email to people in my close world on my birthday. And that list got too long at some point. And I was like, okay, I need to move this somewhere. And I was trying to figure out these different email lists and stuff. And I was like, okay, I'll just do this. And so it's this funny thing that now I send out these very personal messages. And I know that some of the people reading them are people who have known me my whole life. And some are people who read one of my novels and decided to sign up. And it's, I'm somebody who lives really out in the open, and I like pushing the boundaries of how open can I be about my life, including with people who I don't know. And so that is a joy for me. But I would also say that a great place to find me, I'm going to be on tour a lot for My Sister Is Going to Kill Me. If you go to ninaksimon.com, you'll see the list of all the places I'll be. I would love to meet you at an event. There's nothing I love more than meeting readers and talking about books. And especially if you come with your sister, that would be just a blast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That would be such a fun thing. Absolutely. I think, yeah, I'll look on your website. But I think, were you in Chicago for the association?
I just was in Chicago, yeah, to speak with thousands of librarians, which was such a blast, such a pleasure.
Yeah. I saw that event and I was kind of keeping an eye on it. And I was like, oh, I don't think I can go. But it was just like, I imagine that was like so cool for authors to go to. Like, just
absolutely.
Like, librarians, any book nerd, right? Like,
I'm a huge public library fan. And yeah, it was a total delight.
That's awesome. I love that. Okay. So Nina, Simon, My Sister Is Going to Kill Me. That comes out on August 18th. Nina, thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for all your answers, for getting down into the nitty gritty of sister relationships in the Grand Canyon and just outdoorsy life. And when and if you are ready to talk about your next project, feel free to come back. I'd love to chat again.
That'd be great. Thank you so much, Megan. And thank you to all the readers out there who are listening. And one final thing I'll say is that authors love to hear from readers. I didn't realize this so much until I was writing. This is a vulnerable and lonely business. And when I get an email, I got an email yesterday from somebody who had just finished reading Mother Daughter Murder Night. And she was just like, I found it so hilarious. Just like hearing a little thing from somebody about a book that they appreciated, it really makes a difference to us. It really matters. So I encourage you, if you feel up for it, to email or DM an author and tell them how much you like their book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially for just the people, the authors who, you know, who have time and who are looking forward to that interaction and who are like, really want that connection. And it shows like, I love that. So I encourage readers to do that too. Either follow you, pre-order, leave a rating and review, because that will also help. And it's you help you reach more people and you get your projects out there. So absolutely. But this, like, again, thank you so much. And look, everybody buy your book.
Thank you, Megan.
And there you go. That was Nina Simon talking about her book, My Sister is Going to Kill Me. That book is available now. Check out the show notes to see links where you can find Nina online and on social media and where to purchase the book. In the show notes, you'll also see where to find Cantina Book Club on your favorite social media book communities, such as Bookstagram, BookTok, BookTube, Threads, Facebook, and more. And I would love and appreciate it if you could hit that follow or subscribe button so that you never miss out on book reviews and author interviews. If you have any book-loving friends who are looking to get more out of their reading lists, please share Cantina Book Club with them so that they can find upcoming releases and interviews with authors. Another way to help this podcast is to head over to your favorite podcast player and give Cantina Book Club a rating and review. It helps me to reach more potential listeners and fellow book lovers like you. And that goes for any podcast that you listen to. It's one of the easiest things that you could do to help out. If you need book recommendations, you can reach out to me. I'm always excited to share my thoughts. Or you can head over to cantinabookclub.com to read more in-depth book reviews of all types of genres. While you're at it, you could subscribe by entering your email on the website so that you could get new reviews and episode posts delivered directly to your inbox. If you want to support Cantina Book Club even more, you can donate by finding the form on cantinabookclub.com. Whether it's a one-time donation or as little as $1 a month, I seriously appreciate the support and will share it. That appreciation one way or the other. And finally, one of the best ways to help authors promote their work is to head over to Amazon, Goodreads, Storygraph, any website that you know potential readers will be browsing for new titles. Give that book that you've read a reading and review. It helps out so much more than it helps the authors so much to reach potential readers. As always, thanks so much for listening and see you next time. Cheers.